1, 2, 3, 4. Hello, test. Hello, Gemini Control. Hello, hello. We're losing the signal here. Boop, 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 boop. Bring it up big there. I'm more working up here. I'm warming up the whole thing here. We've been just deluged with requests for my singing chicken. For those of you who remember the famous singing chicken, we did. Did you hear my singing chicken? You never heard him? We've literally been deluged with requests. You see, it's just the world divides into two groups of people, I've always felt. The people who understand, and the rest. And you know what category you're in, right, friend? You certainly do. We'd like to, at this point, take a brief moment, since this is the end of the week, to salute London. I'd like to always salute our English brothers at the end of the week. And for those of you who are interested in new civil service openings, the English have opened up a whole new area of civil service work. The head of Britain's National Youth Protection Movement suggested that the government go into the brothel business to halt the spread of pornography, make it a civil service function. Oh, we believe that one of the methods of solving the pornographic problem in Britain is to make possible legalized brothels run by the government, the group's chairman, Paul Daniels, said. Daniels said the aim of his movement was to end the spread of, we quote, pornographic filth in Britain. Well, I imagine, of course, since this will be civil service, they'll have to fill out a form, and it'll all be competitive, of course. It'll be competitive examinations. So would you please salute the citadel of civilization marching on under the guise of Richard the Lionhearted, Winston Churchill, and Paul, what was his name? The little short, skinny one in the middle. Very nice. I tell you, ain't nobody here but us chickens. Wow. Oh. Now, we'd like to salute another victim, if we may, tonight. I don't invent the news. Can we do our bird commercial here before we do anything else? Can we do that? We got a bird commercial here, and I got a letter here. I just got to read to you here. Let me see. Yeah. Here, listen to this one. Dear Shepherd, this guy's writing from Brooklyn. What are you trying to do? I just bought your bird, and that thing is unbelievable. Everyone that walks up my block when I fly it stands around her mouth hanging open. My mother thought you were pulling everybody's leg and wouldn't believe it. When I got my bird wound it up and sent it flying off down the street, all she could say was, he was telling the truth. I took it down to the park, and it nearly got hit by a car, and so far three dogs have tried to eat it, including mine. My sister sits around and just looks. He's made two crash landings, one in a tree, almost hit a drunk, and landed on a Plymouth. My friend saw it and laughed for 3 minutes. One man walking up my block looked at me and my friend like we were crazy, and I flew my bird, and then he tried to steal it. Signed, Brooklyn. Yeah, that's Brooklyn, all right, kid. So if you'd like to have one of these sensational birds, you just get your name on a check or a money order and send it to Flying Bird. They're $3.98 per each, postpaid. Send a check or money order to Flying Bird, Department S, Post Office Box 1909, Grand Central Station, New York, New York. Enough of the bird. And they're guaranteed to fly, which is a hell of a lot more than your Uncle Fred is. Da-da-dee-dee-dee, la-da-da-da-dee, la-da-da-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee. You mind if I get all my stuff here? Hey, we'd like to salute another victim. No, actually, this guy won. It just won. Something happens that warms the cockles of your heart. The real news, the kind of stuff you don't really hear about. You know, it doesn't make the front page of the Times. Did you hear about what happened to James Stolz in Detroit? All right, his a bid by James Stolz's ex-wife for a share of $130,000. He won on the $3 Irish sweepstakes ticket 3 weeks after the divorce. Was turned down happily Friday, hooray, by a judge who declared, and we quote the judge. Now, here's a judge that could stand next to Solomon. Listen to him. What God giveth, man taketh not away. Obviously, if you hit the sweepstakes for 130 grand, God has a hand somewhere in it. Cora Stolz, she sounds like a nice lady, claimed the ticket should have been listed among Stolz's assets before a property settlement was agreed to last December 3rd. And the judge, Judge Burdick, said the former Mrs. Stolz should have known about the ticket since Stolz had been buying them every week for 14 years. And we quote, she is not entitled to one penny more than she's already received. He had no knowledge the ticket would be a winner. I wonder, now listen to this, great, then this is the kind of legal mind I like to hear. Listen to this. I wonder if she would have been willing to take the ticket instead of getting their house in the settlement before it became a winning ticket. Good question. Stolz, a car porter at a car dealership, that means he parks cars, said he planned to take, quote, a long vacation. Once he gets the money, he won 2 days after Christmas when a long-shot horse named Kellane won the two-mile sweepstake race at Leopardstown, Ireland. In their property settlement, which ended 11 years of battling marriage, Mrs. Stolz received the couple's home, all the furniture, and Mr. Stolz kept a 1969 model car with bad valves. So, we point out that... I could hear her. I could hear her sitting there, you know, she's got the house, the whole bit, and poor old Stolz is out there parking cars. He's got his 1969 car with bad valves. When all of a sudden the phone rings in her house, she says, hello? What did you say, Emily? Yes, Emily. What? He did what? How much? How much? Quick, get my lawyer. And 5 minutes later... isn't it great to hear just once justice triumph? Just once. Yes, indeed. Well, by the way, Mr. Stolz says he would have been happily willing to give his ex-wife $1.50, half of what the ticket was worth, before it became a winner. But he said she didn't stay around long enough after the judge's decision to collect $1.50. Hey, gang, how are you? Hey, listen, we've got to salute another guy. Give me a little drum roll in there, please, Nicholas, please. Drum roll. Oh, hooray. Somebody did it. Somebody did it for all of us. Yeah, yeah. Oh, the saints come marching in. Yeah. When them saints come traipsing in. Oh, here they come. Oh, didn't he ramble? Yeah, yeah, yeah. He did it for us. All right, we'd like to salute with that little singing vocal salute there. An impatient motorist in Roselle Park, New Jersey. Is there a Roselle Park? Good. An impatient motorist who beeped at the driver. Ooh, this kind of guy I want to kill. Oh, I'd like to kill that kind of guy. You know the kind of guy that starts blowing his horn even before the damn light turns his grip? Boop, boop, boop. Hey, come on in. In the light, you know. An impatient motorist who beeped at the driver in front of him when the light turned green got a dent kicked into the left front door of his car. Barry Davis, 20, told police a man in a station wagon kicked his small foreign car after the light changed at 1:40 p.m. on Westfield Avenue to Locust Street. Davis, who told police he had beeped, said the man in the station wagon drove off, but he took the license plates and he plans to file a complaint. Yeah, naturally. Beep! Because, oh, I've had enough. And bam, he kicks his car, gets in. So I kind of like that. That's a Jersey feeling. That's one thing about Jersey. It's got vitality, guts. Jersey man marches up and says it. This is WOR New York. Hit the ding-dong here. We've got a commercial. Please, Nick. Please. Please. It's rated X.
What can your children show you about love?
That's it.
Together.
Rated X.
A new motion picture brings you the answers.
Oh, yeah.
Among those who have been able to get in to see together...
Oh, it's been fantastic.
There have been some very interesting reactions.
I think they went too far with this
one. I really liked it.
It was great.
Oh,
fantastic.
Rotten.
Together is a film that will not leave you indifferent. You will have to see it for yourself and decide for yourself.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Together, rated XXXX, is now playing at RKO and other showcase theaters. Excuse me. All right. They just, you know how to bring that in. Would you like to do something here? Nothing here for me, Nick. You got that thing set up in there. Let's see. Get it all set up there. That's right. The one over in the machine there. Yeah, hey, listen, I just read a little thing I think you'll enjoy. I'll just read a little thing. You mind if I quote somebody here tonight? You might. Of course, life is that way. Life is that way. I saw a scene one time when a guy was beeping his horn. Did I ever tell you about the time I saw a guy? Listen, there was a guy sitting out in front of a house one day, and I'm in a house in this block, in this apartment. And how many times have you ever seen some idiot arrives about, you know, 10 o'clock in the morning on Saturday or Sunday morning when half the neighborhood's trying to get some sleep, the only time they can sleep in a week, you know, and some guy sits out and goes, "Nah, boop, hold up, boop, 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 boop." He's blowing his horn because Aki, you know, they're supposed to play catch this Saturday morning. Aki is fooling around in the kitchen making peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. And so Louie is down there leaning on the horn of his crummy rattletrap Electra. Well, he's blowing that horn. And it's just going on and on. And finally it began to get on my, on my nerves. So I walk out to the kitchen there, see, and I look out the window, and I see this klutz sitting down there. You know, the typical horn-blowing klutzes. Some guys, I seriously feel there's some guys who would be emasculated if you removed the horn off their car. They would start talking in high, thin voices, and their lisp would become very apparent, you know? They go out and buy tinfoil shoes and all. So, nevertheless, here's this guy going, "Boop, boop." He's blowing a horn. And you see heads coming out, you know? All the windows, people looking down. He doesn't give, you know what he doesn't give, right? You know, all right. "Boop." And he keeps looking out, you know, like a big... He had one of these real big, fat faces with a cigar sticking out. "Boop." And once in a while, "Hey, come on, Louie!" "Hey, Louie, come on, will ya? Move it! Get the lead out!" Well, here he was down there. I mean, he made Archie Bunker look like, really, like Arthur Schlesinger, which really isn't so hard if you ever know Arthur Schlesinger, but he's leaning on the horn there, see? When all of a sudden, downstairs, after about 20 minutes of this, a guy comes rushing out. He just comes rushing out of the apartment right next door to me. I see him come running out. He runs around the back of the car, see? And he knocks on the back of the car. He just knocks on the truck. "Hey, you! Hey!" With that, the guy looks out, you know, big fat slob. He looks out. Luigi looks out, see? He said, "What do you want?" He said, "Hey, look! Look at what's happening in the back of your car!" With that, he jumps out of his car, runs around. The guy runs around the other side. The other guy reaches in, flips the lid of the hood, you know, the hatch, the lid, the latch on the hood. See, the hood jumps up. He reaches in, and right in mid-blat, he grabs the horn wire. It goes, "Wah!" He says, "Blow it now, you fat slob!" And the wires are flying out. He runs in.
And your heads were popping out of all the apartment buildings all around, you know, and hollering, hey, give it to him, hooray, hooray, hooray. And down below, you know, is big fat Luigi sitting there in his Electra, you know, and the wires are sticking out of the hood. And he's really bugged. You can see his face is purple, you know. He swallowed his cigar butt, and he's sitting there, you know. And all of a sudden, he runs out, and he says, let's go, Louie! I've been waiting here. I've got to go. The hell with it. I'm going to tell Marge you ain't coming. And he jumps on his car, and he drives off, trying to pretend that nothing happened. And so, I slept well at night. I slept good that night. Oh, yeah, yeah. You know what? Have you noticed, by the way, speaking of guys that you would like to catch right by the Adam's apple, I wonder who these clowns are that go all over New York City these days and squirt their names and their friends' names all over everything with spray can paint. Who are those dildocks? Yeah? I'd like to see one of those guys, if I had a can of spray paint with me, I know what I'd do. I thought about it many times what I would do, what I would write on them. Wait, we're getting the report here. Yes, ma'am, please. I don't know what that means. Johnny 32, you know, Big L 12, all that stuff. I don't know, you know. They write it on the bus and all that. Oh, yes, we're living among interesting things here these days. You know, speaking of the inexplicable, I have a note here. I want to read it to you out there, anybody listening. Maybe they can help me. But I'm not help me. Maybe they can tell me what this is. It says, Dear Shepherd, a few months ago you did a program on the car freak thing. This car freak thing. He says, Shepherd, as a matter of fact, he says, I thought it was done in such good taste to the point you didn't cut anybody down while saying something totally intelligent about the matter at hand. However, I was watching Dean Martin about 3 weeks ago, and a female comic was doing your stuff word for word. Who was that? Is there anybody out there who saw that? I did a show on the car freaks, and he says it was months ago, and then he says all of a sudden it appeared on a female comic doing it on... Now, as a matter of actual principle, I never watched the Dean Martin show, frankly. And I just wonder who that was. He says, Mr. Shepherd, you ought to know it. There's some chick out there. He didn't tell me it was stealing your stuff. Hey, you know, by the way, one more thing before we get totally into this thing. There's been... hey, listen, I had a great thing happen to me this afternoon. Really interesting thing. I was down... down in City Hall. Actually, it was the municipal building where WNYC is. And WNYC... And the only reason I'm doing this tonight is because a lot of people are going to get bugged if they aren't informed of it and hear it. But WNYC has a show which is on every Saturday morning at 10:30. WNYC is the New York City radio station, television station, and FM station, other community-owned. And they invite an author, but the show is actually a program done by kids who talk about an author's book. There's about 15 teenage kids, and they're young teenagers. These are kids like 12, 13, 14, 15. They're sub-high school and just in the early days of high school. And great, they sit around at a table, you know, they have their little nameplates in front of them with microphones. And they read your book, and then they discuss it on the air and ask you questions about it. And I heard more intelligent stuff said about Wanda Hickey, which is my book, if you don't know. It's Wanda Hickey's Night of Golden Memories and Other Disasters. I heard more comments, intelligent comments made in that show than all the critics combined. And it was really a great show, and it was recorded this afternoon. And I was on it, and they interviewed me about the book. And it will be broadcast the 29th of January. And it's at 10:30 in the morning. That's a Saturday morning. And it's done by the library people, the City of New York library people. And it's also on FM and AM. It's on both. So the FM frequency is 93.9. It's 10:30 in the morning. And WNYC is, of course, 830. 830 is their frequency. And that's going to be next... That's a Saturday, a week from tomorrow, January 29th. It was a great moment. Hey, you know, speaking of literature, do you want to hear something good? Listen to this now. Get ready in there. You know, all New York really doesn't know much about what's going on and what the other, you know, what towns are like outside of New York. And in fact, that was almost one of the basic spines of my TV series on PBS when we went all around America. And, you know, we spent some great evenings in places like, Rawlins, Wyoming. Well, what's your favorite one? You keep talking about that town in Colorado. Now, go ahead, just hold your sign up. I don't want to get on the phone. You can tell me what it is. But there was a town that we spent one night in a town, two nights in a town in Colorado that was not too far from Estes, actually. Yeah, Manitou Springs. That, boy, I'll tell you, in a place called the Sundown Cafe. And, yeah, there were cowboys come in there. See, a whole bunch of guys come in there. This is a non-tourist country, see, and all these cowboys come in there. And they had this C&W band is up there. And there was the guy singing the favorite tune, which was big around there. Nobody hears it around here, called I Feel Like a Dime, Laying Around Waiting for Change. And he did. He said, I feel like a dime laying around waiting for change. And you're sitting there smiling. You're grinning at me every night, baby. And I know that I'm nothing. Well, you know, we're all sitting there, and these big old boys are coming in there playing pool. And every time they'd play, you know, they'd start playing another game, they'd rack up the pool. You know, they were playing rotation. And they were playing Chicago slop, too. And they'd get them all racked up. See, and every time they'd bring them some more Coors beer, which is the big drink around there, see. Coors, man, that's real beer. So these big old boys walking, hey, come on, Jake, how about another beer? And they had these beers all lined up around the pool table. It must have been 35 of them, see? And wherever the guy was playing a shot, there was an empty, you know, there was a bottle there for him to drink out of. They were all half empty. See, he didn't carry the bottle around. He had 100 of them all open, see? In other words, it was a rotating, gigantic, one single beer in different bottles. You follow what I'm saying there? So if you'd like to know what it's like out in the great open spaces, I have a piece here that I just got to read to you. It's just well done, because it really captures something. Please, if you will, Nick.
And deep in the purple hills, where the cold winds blow out of the Canadian wilds, out in the vast plains, lies South Dakota. South Dakota. Yep, South Dakota calls itself the land of infinite variety. And no place in the state better epitomizes this variousness than Vermilion. Vermilion, friends, partners, is easy to find. Lying that it does, halfway between Elk Point and Yankton, about 8 miles off Route 29. The main road between Sioux City, Iowa, home of the nation's ninth largest stockyard, and Mitchell, South Dakota, famous for the Mitchell Corn Palace. The structure constructed entirely of corn cobs. Vermilion's three major hotels, actually motels, the Wigwam, the Tomahawk, and the Prairie, adequately serve the unfortunately limited tourist trade. Nobody ever comes to Vermilion. Of these, the Prairie is perhaps the best, for it offers not only a striking view of cornfields, but also a fine restaurant and bar which adjoin a 12-lane bowling alley. Here, the traveler sinks deep into a narrow coriform chair. A coriform chair sips his grain belt beer and watches through a plate glass partition the fierce competition among members of the local bowling leagues. Sits back and drinks his beer. Have you ever had grain belt beer? Oh, that's a real local beer that's drunk only up in a certain part of South Dakota. The Prairie Motel epitomizes that quality South Dakotans call class, a term admittedly hard to pin down, but which might be defined as that sophisticated but light-hearted spirit which led the managers of the Prairie to paint the words bulls and heifers on the restaurant and restroom doors. You've seen that. That's the kind of light-hearted goodwill they have. Another establishment with class is the Charcoal Lounge in the heart of downtown Vermilion,
Like the Prairie, it is frequented by faculty from the University of South Dakota and young executives from the J.C. Penney store and the alfalfa plant. And like the Prairie, it serves hearty meals of well-done beef, and to the delight of the gourmet, salads prepared in that great Midwestern, Upper West tradition, delectable combinations of cottage cheese, bananas, jelly, canned fruit salad, shredded coconut, pineapple, and whipped marshmallow. But the greatest single attraction at the Charcoal Lounge is Ronnie. And we'd like to talk about Ronnie tonight on a little program about Vermilion, South Dakota. Ronnie's the only bartender in the Midwest with a gouty big toe. Ronnie can spin many a good yarn about his affliction. And if you just ask about it when you order a bottle of Greenbelt beer, stranger or not, he will regale you with funny stories far into the night. For example, "See, I had to cut this year hole in my best shoe," Ronnie will say, hoisting his foot up on the bar and wiggling his famous toe, which everyone throughout Vermilion know and have loved for many years. But as seasoned travelers know, one wishes not only to frequent those places with class, for by doing so, one fails to meet the real people. As we all know, you've got to get out and meet the real people. For Vermilion is most compact, consisting as it does of about 30 weather-beaten, dirty old buildings facing one another across Main Street. And it is just across from the Charcoal Lounge on the south side of Main Street that one encounters the real people at play. Now, the best place to get to know the natives is Hogan's, a quaint old tavern with a utilitarian bar, which is an enormous plank. It's just laid across a couple of sawhorses where they just stand there and drink, that's all. They also have a floor there, some wooden tables, and a jukebox, which boasts one of the best collections of Ernest Tubb records in the world. The mood is simple and heartwarming at Hogan's, where farmers, truck drivers, drunken agency Indians, and the boys from the alfalfa plant congregate nightly. The talk is boisterous, but good humored. For example, "I saw who you was with last night. Hee-haw," they shout, slap their legs, and stomp their feet. And the remark always is made then, "You never." The stranger need feel no apprehension, for he is soon made part of the fun. For example, "What the hell are you looking at, dude?" I would suggest that at that point you don't say anything, just sit back and enjoy the fun. Or usually it is followed up by this, "How do you like a good stomping, boy?" Ladies are treated chivalrously at Hogan's. For example, here's a typical remark picked up at Hogan's last Wednesday night. "There's that Ellie, works up the diner. Oh, I'd like to get me some of that." And the proprietor, a diminutive man whose solemn demeanor cloaks a fun-loving nature, for example, "Old Squint would murder his mother for a nickel," delights in serving up ladylike drinks, the favorite being Seagram's and Dr. Pepper. The men, most of them traditionalists, prefer the customary shot and beer, although on festive occasions they will order Coke Highs, as they call it. "Give me a Coke High, Squint," which is bourbon and Coca-Cola, well mixed. Hogan's doesn't specialize in haute cuisine, as do the Prairie and the Charcoal Lounge, but one can always enjoy a tasty pre-cooked, cellophane-wrapped ham and cheese sandwich with Old Squint expertly heats in a small aluminum oven. And the beer nuts at Hogan's are justly famous. "Give me some of them there beer nuts, you drunken old bum," the jocular cry rings out nightly. The numerous other attractions at Vermilion are too various to detail here. The public library, which contains a complete collection of the novels of Frank Yerby, an autographed first edition of the works of Badger Clark, South Dakota's poet laureate, and the handsome new building on the Wesley Foundation on the USD campus, where on Sundays one can enjoy tea with Preem, peanut butter cookies, and good clean conversation. The movie theater in Vermilion regularly reruns the best of Doris Day films, and occasionally there's an old Gene Withers or Judy Cano before the connoisseur. And don't think that the electronic revolution has bypassed South Dakota. McLuhan himself would be impressed with the impact of radio station WNAX in Yankton on the area. The wizardry of radio keeps Vermilion residents informed of exciting local news stories. One of the most gripping of these recently recounted was how a farmer from Sweat, South Dakota, lost his life when his head was caught in the power takeoff of his John Deere tractor, as well as more national news such as the daily reports of hog prices from the Chicago livestock auction. WNAX also carries a wealth of educational and cultural programs such as Lifeline and the Singing Lady. And finally, no description of Vermilion would be complete without an appreciation of the scenery it offers. Perhaps most striking of all
is the view of the small brown hills of Nebraska that can be enjoyed from a bluff on the west side of town. For the convenience of the nature lover, the city has thoughtfully placed a green bench atop the bluff. One should sit with caution, however, for the bench has been there a long time, and nature's erosion processes, as well as a lot of whittlers, have sharply heightened the danger of splinters. There are times, admittedly, when the prospect is somewhat obscured by smoke belching from the alfalfa plant, which nestles in a gulch just below the bluff and blows over the traveler at any and all times, since the wind tends to come from all directions at once. In fact, the traveler might well be advised at such times to remove himself quickly, for to the uninitiated, the smell of burning alfalfa may prove unpleasant and may even cause mild gasping and choking. Call for a bottle of Grass City beer. Nevertheless, stenches aside, Vermilion, South Dakota should definitely rate a visit by that traveler through the land of infinite variety, who possesses sophisticated sensibilities and an appreciation of the exotic and the colorful. This Handy Hint and Kink program for travelers, little travel program, is brought to you as a special public service of this station. And as the sun sets over Squint's Bar, and the smell of roasting beer nuts, and the sound of a stranger being stomped back of Fred's garage can be heard, we leave colorful Vermilion, South Dakota. We leave Ellie, who's just walking into Al's bar down the street, and maybe Big Al might get some of that tonight. But nevertheless, we leave colorful Vermilion, South Dakota, with regret in our heart as we say adios, amigo, for another week's program. Do you know that's no kidding? I don't know whether I ever told this story on the air, but I want you to, you know, to the guy who travels a great deal in the world, and I've been around the world maybe 2-3 times now at this point in my life, and I have yet to find a country anywhere in the world that has as much unbelievably total, all-absorbing interest for me as my own country. I must say this, if you have never traveled throughout the great, vast emptinesses of the Great Plains states and the Upper West, and you know, most people who travel in the West, they think of places like Arizona and that, but let me tell you what happened one day, and this was in Colorado. Now, I don't know whether I ever told this story, but I'm going to tell you an actual story that happened to me when we were shooting the television show, Gene Shepherd's America. Now, you probably, those of you who listen to me long enough, know that I'm a curious chameleon-type person. Anyone who knows me well personally knows that in a curious way, I become part of the scene I'm in and quickly have the vernacular. You've seen that, Nick. And I don't know, it's always been this way for me. Maybe, you know, maybe it's the actor in me, but I just become it. And so I pass. You know the expression they used to use up in Harlem, to pass, man? Well, I pass. Well, we're way out in Colorado. Now, we started at Boulder City, and we moved up into the high Rockies. First we went through Boulder City, through Denver, and then further on north and west until finally we're in the high Rockies. And what we were doing was looking for a real ghost town. A ghost town. There's all kinds of ghost towns. Now, there's the tourist ghost town, which is Cripple Creek, you know, which is kind of preserved. But then, as you get higher and higher in the mountains, and it gets more and more rarefied in the atmosphere, you're maybe 9,000-10,000 feet up, and it's cold and bitter, and the wind blows, and there's a starkness to the landscape, almost like the moon. You find abandoned towns that were built around 2 or 3 mine shafts, and they're just there. That's it. There's no tourists, nothing there. So
We worked our way first to you started, we did, we started our trek at Cripple Creek, see? And looking for a real ghost town. Cripple Creek is an interesting thing, but we went into this bar. In fact, two of the girls that were traveling with us, Lee Brown was one of them, Olivia Tappan, the producers, went into the bar, see, and we used them as shills. You know, girls can get information out of people in these places where hard men with blue jowls sit squatting over a Coors. Girls can get stuff out of them that no man can ever get, see, so we'd send these girls in, and they just go in the bar, see, they know what they're doing there, and pretty soon they start talking. One of the girls will say, and they're in this bar in Cripple Creek, which is a ghost town built on old silver mines. And one of them says to the bartender, where's a real ghost town? And he says, go away. He says, this ghost town, of course, you know, kind of really, but not really. He said, I'll tell you what you do. You ought to go up to, Victoria. Victor. Victor. He said, go up to Victor. He says, you know, it's 4 miles up. He said, tell you, you take the state highway out. You go up the Gold Hill Road. He says, you go right on up past the big barn, turn left. You'll see this gravel road. And he says, you follow it up past that old mine shaft, you'll be in Victor. Try Victor. So they met us at the outskirts of town, and we drove out the state road, turned right at the windmill, went up into the mountains past Fred's barn, past the Bull Durham sign, down the gravel road, and by God, there was Victor. And I want to tell you, Victor was laying there stark and cold, like a lunar, like something that out of your imagination. See, a lot of old storefronts just sitting there, not a bird cheeping, nothing. Well, there was one little bar going full blast in Victor. Well, not really going full blast. There was about five stools in there and a couple of mean-eyed-looking men squatting down there drinking Coors in the middle of a totally deserted town, old boarded-up buildings all over the place. And these two girls were sent in. We parked in a vacant lot where there was a lot of old busted railroad ties and sent them around a corner, and they went into this bar in Victor. Well, all three of them looked, you know, a couple of guys named Artie, one guy named Big Louie, and Lefty sitting over there by the jukebox, and the girls walked in, sat down, and drank a beer. And, you know, you don't go just walking in. It's like stalking a wily native. You don't just come in and start yapping. You come in and sit real quiet like you're running away from something. You drink your beer hard and long. You order another one, and you look with sad eyes at the mirror. And finally, one of the girls says, wonder where there's a real ghost town. And Art, sitting there playing the jukebox, he gets up every 5 minutes, throws another quarter in the jukebox, keeps listening to that same record over and over again. Merle Haggard singing Harold Super Service, just playing that over and over again. Harold Super Service, about that big old Super Service in the sky. Dale Reeves plucking and singing away once in a while. Occasionally you hear just a sound occasionally of Tammy Wynette, but outside of that, nothing stirring. And he says, I'll tell you what you do. He says, hey, Louie, don't you think they ought to go down and take a look at Independence? And 5 minutes later, we are moving higher, higher up in the mountains, and now we're really going up. And now we're at 9,000 feet, and the temperature has dropped 40 degrees, and the wind is blowing, and there lays nothing all around our feet, and a couple of stark mine shafts sticking up out of the side of one of the hills, and a few wild cattle roaming among the weeds, busted window panes and flapping pieces of paper from years and years ago, old shoes, and a 1927 Whippet laying up on its roof and rusting away in that cold air. A couple of old tractors. We were in the town of Independence, where they'd given up the ghost many, many decades ago. Well, we're taking pictures now. This is nothing. This is a real ghost town. When all of a sudden, down the gravel road, I've got my western hat on, see, and I'm wearing these blue jeans, and I got my mean look. And down the road comes this great big Dodge troop carrier, an old troop carrier, and it was painted orange. Old Dodge World War II troop carrier, and it comes roaring up, and three guys are sitting in there, and they're good old boys. I see right away, and I walk up and say, hey, where are you guys going? And they stop this thing. One of them says, what business are yours?
I said, how come you guys painted this troop carrier orange? My God, that's a collector's item. Don't you know that? And the one in the driver's seat turns, he says, Al, I told you this thing was worth it. We picked it up for $40 down in Pierre. He said, $40, that's all. And we should never have painted it orange. I told you we should have left it green with that big white star on the side. And I says, well, let's see you do it. Let's see you throw it in reverse. This is a four-wheel drive, right? And the guy says, yeah. He throws it in reverse, and he starts climbing right up a mountain. He's kicking up the dirt. He says, yeah, wow, look at that, man. And she's hanging vertical. And then he lays it back down on the road. He says, oh, boy, she's a goer, ain't she? I said, she sure is. He said, you guys going to the dance tonight, Cripple Creek? I said, you bet we are. He said, you really are, huh? I'll see you tonight, Cripple Creek. And he said, how about you, Tex? Tex says, yeah, we'll be down there. And he wheels that great big old four-wheel drive troop carrier around, kicks up the dirt, when all of a sudden, listen to this, Nick, a hand comes out of the window, just like that, and he's got a big 38 Magnum, the biggest Magnum you ever saw. He's got that big old Magnum, and he says, let's go to the dance tonight down in Cripple Creek. We'll see you in Joe's. Kaboom! 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 He emptied that entire cylinder, hitting those hills, and you could hear them slugs ricocheting off them rocks. Go, go, go! Kaboom! Go, go! And off they went, trailing dust. And that night we had ourselves a dance. Joe's down in Cripple Creek, and them three good old boys come in, and they were dressed. They were dressed for Saturday going out tonight because they had their clean-pressed Texaco suits on. They all worked out at the Texaco station. They were wearing their Texaco jackets. One of them said Joe, the other said Tex, the other said Art on it. The three of them walked in, and Art come over, the one that had that big 38 Magnum. He walked over and he says, listen, if any of these good old boys in this place gave me any trouble, you come over and see me. You come over and see me. I said, don't worry, Art, I can handle myself. He said, I can see that, but hey, you get in a problem, you come over and see me. Me and Tex, we know what to do about these good old boys. And up there, standing back at the bar, Hank was singing once again, I feel like a dime waiting for change. I'm a dime waiting for change, I ain't no damn good. And so out in the dark, swirling bowl of night, out there where the snowflakes drift down from the infinite variety of the total purple hills of time, lost and gone in the broken spoon of man's desires. Out there where the wind screams through the rusted girders of ancient mine shafts, too sad, too lost, too gone, and too low to contemplate, the wild cattle move. And Tex and Art and Joe empty their wild ricocheting shells at the unseen, unfeeling hills. And another Hallmark card is sent. We're visiting here in colorful Colorado. Wish you were one of us. My mark is on the room that I'm occupying on the third floor in the lost and gone town of Independence. Yep, you got a friend here tonight. You have any trouble with any of these good old boys, you just come over here and ask for me or I. My name's Tex. Don't forget that. W.O.R. New York, you got Lester Smith in the news coming up.